Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Stars James Marino.
James, before we get started, I wanted to wish the best of, I know, can you wish luck to people in theater? Is that something you don't do? Either way, good luck, break a leg, whatever it is, to all three of the Broadway shows that premiere today in their first previews in Heisenberg, The Encounter, and The Front Page. It's always cool when a bunch of new shows start on Broadway, and this is the time to get excited about theater. It's everyone's kind of, you know, shaking off the sweat from summer, and it's getting down to theater time.
We wish you long runs and artistic fulfillment.
Yeah, that.
That's the one. All right. First up in the news, Broadway lights to dim for Edward Albee.
Yeah, we've obviously been talking about the passing of Edward Albee both on Sundays This Week on Broadway and yesterday's Today on Broadway, but we did want to give a quick update because yesterday the Broadway League announced that the marquees of Broadway theaters will dim for 1 minute tomorrow night at exactly 7:45 p.m. in his honor. So if you are going to be in the theater district tomorrow night, take a minute to honor his memory. I know a lot of people have been doing that since his passing was announced on Friday evening. I apologize. But it'll be nice to do it as a group collectively in solidarity on Wednesday night.
Next up in the news, Monday was a big day for Scott Rudin. Did he have the best week ever?
I don't know about the best week, but it was definitely a pretty good day, at least when he got in touch with Jeremy Gerard. But James, yesterday we talked about the possibility that producer Scott Rudin was a little miffed that new musical Come From Away was pushing his Tony-winning passion project The Humans out from the Schoenfeld Theater in early 2017. Last week, Deadline was reporting that Rudin and his co-producer Barry Diller had not yet decided whether or not to close the show or to transfer it to another house on or off Broadway. Well, just a few hours after our show published yesterday morning, that situation came into slightly sharper focus in another Deadline exclusive from Jeremy Gerard, as it was confirmed that during the week leading up to Labor Day, The Humans had in fact recouped its $3.8 million investment, which included the $600K needed to move the show from the Hayes to the Schoenfeld. Not only that, but with the larger audiences at the Schoenfeld, the play posted its, here we go, best week ever, grossing over $671,000 last week. We'll have more on the grosses in a moment, but James, now that we know that The Humans has recouped, does that change your thoughts at all on whether or not Rudin will keep the show going at another Broadway or maybe even back to an off-Broadway house come winter?
I think maybe there's more money on the road than keeping it running on Broadway. I don't know, but I would think take it on the road.
What Fair. Do you think? Yeah, no, I mean, I think I don't, you know, plays don't do well on the road traditionally. It needs to be some big thing like War Horse or the upcoming Curious Incident. So it'd be interesting to see if a small family, you know, dinner table drama / dark comedy would play well on the touring circuit. But hey,
I'm saying maybe top tier cities, you know, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles, those type of things where we do a month sit down at each. I don't know, but you got a very good point about it's true. Plays don't tour as well as musicals do.
I would think that if they were going to do something like that, the first thing that they would have to secure is making sure that the Broadway cast, or at least the Tony winners, Jane Houdyshell and Reed Birney, were going to be a part of it as well.
Yep. Let's move on to the next thing. Hello, Dolly sets Broadway sales record.
Just a few hours after Gerard posted his first Rudin exclusive, he posted another one in which it was reported that on Hello, Dolly's first day of selling tickets, that the Bette Midler revival banked $9.08 million, a figure that is believed to be the highest in Broadway history for one-day sales. James, we've said it before, every day is a good day to be Scott Rudin, but apparently yesterday was a really good day to be Scott Rudin.
That leads right into last week's Broadway grosses.
Yeah, by all objective measures, last week was a very good week at the Broadway box office. All 24 shows that played last week saw receipts in the black week over week, with more than half of them seeing six-figure gains. This also coincides with the annual Fall Broadway Week, which I don't think is any coincidence with all of the black numbers showing up. We've mentioned this before, but it certainly seems like there was somebody taking advantage of all the discounts and 2-for-1 ticket deals last week on Broadway. On Your Feet showed the largest increase over the previous week, picking up over $162,000, followed by Jersey Boys and Kinky Boots. Despite the gains, though, only 6 shows were north of $1 million, led by Hamilton, which was above $2 million again, which, surprisingly, though, saw the smallest week-to-week increase, although when you think about the fact that it's pretty much making as much money as it possibly can, maybe not that surprising. It was followed above $1 million by The Lion King, Wicked, Aladdin, The Book of Mormon, and Cats. And Paramore, oh so close, was just $616 from joining them in the 7-figure club as well, even though it's only banking about 52% of its gross potential on a weekly basis. The two new shows to start performances on Broadway last week, Black to the Future and Roundabout's revival of The Cherry Orchard, were down at the bottom of the weekly grosses because they played fewer than the full 8 performances that every other show did. But Lewis Black's stand-up show, which only will play Monday nights through late October, pulled in an impressive $154,181 in its one performance last week, which if you extrapolate that to 8, is over $1.2 million, which isn't too bad for a one-man show. Now, the Diane Lane-led Chekhov show only grossed $236,157 in 5 performances last week. However, as we noted with Holiday Inn a week or so ago, Roundabout shows do have a tendency to start slow and improve as weeks go on due to their subscriber model, so hopefully this one will pick up as we go as well. While we're on the topic, Holiday Inn did see a fairly decent improvement in its first week of 8 full performances, increasing nearly $125,000 to crack the 400K barrier. Still not great, but certainly trending in the right direction, James.
Yeah, this is all good stuff happening here. Let's pull for the Cherry Orchard. What a cast that they have there. And as you mentioned, as their subscribers get more into the thick of things, I guess they really don't have, quote unquote, a preview period, I guess. But they do need to pull in that money to pay the bills.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question, James. Do you know, I'm assuming that the Roundabout subscribers get to pick their dates generally, like where, you know, regional theaters, like where I've lived the last 10 or so years, you get to say, I want to do it on the first week Sunday, or I want to do it on the third week's Friday. Is that how it works with Broadway subscriber models as well?
You know, I haven't subscribed to Roundabout or Lincoln Center in 15 years or more. So you were able to, as a subscriber, kind of pick your general weeks and see when it worked out the best, but it's not an exact science.
Yeah, well, maybe if a listener knows who does subscribe, they can let us know how that works. I just wondered if there was a bell curve as to when the subscribers were there, or if there was some sort of, you know, did they stay away from the first 2 or 3 weeks because they knew it was previews, things would be getting worked out? Did they wait to after the reviews come in, after it was officially open? I just kind of wonder if subscribers had a little bit more say into when their tickets were. So if somebody is a subscriber to Lincoln Center, MTC, RTC, whatever you subscribe to, let us know how that works.
All right, what's up in the show and casting news?
Well, we already knew that Jessica Hecht would be joining John Turturro, Tony Shalhoub, and Danny DeVito in Arthur Miller's The Price next spring. But yesterday, we learned that she would be exiting the Broadway revival of Fiddler on the Roof, where she has played Tevye's wife, Goldie, since the show opened. She will play her final performance in November and will be replaced by 4-time Tony nominee Judy Kuhn, who is fresh off starring in Fun Home for, I mean, gosh, it's got to be over 2 years now between the off-Broadway and Broadway runs. Broadway's original Cosette will play her first performance on November 22nd and will continue with the show through its closing performance on New Year's Eve. Now, from one big-name female star to another, yesterday the Public Theater announced that they have already extended the Rachel Weisz-led production of David Hare's play Plenty. The play, which doesn't even begin performances until October 4th, added 2 more weeks yesterday and is now scheduled to run through November 20th. The show co-stars Corey Stoll, Emily Burgle, Byron Jennings, Pun Bandu, and more. Earlier this month, we also told you about Sarah Delap's girls indoor soccer play, The Wolves, which is playing at the Duke on 42nd Street Theater as part of Playwrights Realm season. Well, yesterday, the theater company announced that the show had been extended for the final time, now running through September 29th. Information on how to purchase this new block of tickets can be found in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. And finally, in our show and casting section, yesterday, Playwrights Horizons announced that they would be holding a Live for Five lottery for its next show, Atom Box A Life, starring David Hyde Pierce. A ticketing initiative created in 2007 as part of Playwrights Horizons Arts Access Program, Live for Five makes a limited number of $5 tickets available for the first preview performance of each Playwrights Horizon production through a lottery via the company's website, phnyc.org. $5 tickets to the first preview on Friday, September 3rd are available through the lottery, which began yesterday. Entries will be accepted through noon New York time on this Thursday, September 22nd, and winners will be notified later that afternoon and will need to confirm quickly. So if you enter, don't wait too long to check your email this Thursday. A Life will run through November 13th with an opening night of October 24th.
So Matt, why do I have this lump in my throat? My eyes are watering.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's because you watched the video of Angela Lansbury singing Beauty and the Beast at the 25th anniversary screening last week.
Oh, how did you know that?
Because I'm the one who wrote the script. but yeah, this is, you know, I meant to look up how, do you know how old Angela Lansbury is? I meant to look it up and I didn't. Angela Lansbury.
40 years old, something like that.
I was going to push in her late 20s, but no, she's actually 90 years old. She's 90 years old. She'll be 91 next month. And she comes out in front of this crowd. Alan Menken's at the piano and she sings Beauty and the Beast. Now, this is a song that I would venture to guess that, you know, what, three quarters of America knows by heart, maybe. And to hear her come out and sing it, and she's, as Seth Rudetsky would say, she's still got it, James. You know, she clearly is 90 years old and she doesn't have the voice she used to, but it still sounds pretty darn impressive. And the fact that it's Angela Lansbury standing there by herself in front of a mic with Alan Menken on the piano, that's pretty special.
Everybody, please stop this podcast right now and go watch this because it is so wonderful. I can't even tell you.
I had goosebumps from the moment she started singing, and I've actually got many goosebumps just talking about it. She was really incredible, and she is one of the most special performers that we've ever had on Broadway, one of the most special performers we've ever had on TV and film. She is one of a kind, that's for sure.
What a wonderful way to end up this episode. So why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWW Matt and subscribe to Something Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. So we will be back and talk with you on Wednesday morning. Bye-bye. Along and get in the car, chick.